God, let the words of my mouth, the meditations and responses of all of our hearts be enough. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Children are wonderful at asking questions. One Sunday in church, I went down to sit on the chancel steps to tell the children a story. I tucked my legs under my robe, and one of the children wondered if I had shoes on. Following a baptism once, a child asked if I'd been walking on water. It seems that kids care about being grounded, where our feet are. But questions are not for children only. People of faith ask many questions throughout the Bible story. Way back in that story told in Exodus, God's people are wandering through the wilderness. They are freed from slavery, but they're facing all kinds of new and unexpected hardships, including they've run out of bottled water. They have this most basic need for survival, but they're in the middle of nowhere, and their leader, Moses, is no help at all. They quarrel, and Moses asks, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" And they come back with their exasperated question, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt just to kill us with thirst?" And then Moses asks God, "What on earth am I going to do with these people? You know that they're about ready to stone me." God does come through in a most remarkable and unexpected and beautiful way, provides water, and the people drink, and they are able to go on. But Moses does not forget the big question, the great testing, doubting of the Lord question. Is the Lord among us or not? In fact, Moses marked the place and the moment with the names Massah and Meribah, meaning trial and test, contention and quarrel. He doesn't memorialize the miracle of God providing water and thirsty people drinking. He remembers the question. And it comes up again in Psalm 95. Isn't that something, the second half of that psalm, where God still sounds kind of upset? And then I want to ask a question. Really? God of mercy and love? Really? You're going to loathe the people? Your people? There are plenty of other question askers. There's Job, remember, that richest of men, who suddenly becomes the poorest, most desolate of human beings. And he weeps and he wails and he has to fend off his know-it-all friends. And for 25 chapters, he howls at his friends and at God. And he asks over and over, "Why me?" The Samaritan woman has a chance encounter with Jesus at a well, and they talk. This is the longest conversation Jesus has with anyone recorded in the New Testament. And she asks, "Why are you talking to me?" Samaritans and Jews didn't do that. Men and women they didn't know didn't do that. Living water? Where do you get that? When the Messiah comes, will he explain everything? Or Nicodemus, a well-educated, Ivy League kind of guy, comes to Jesus at night because it's hard to ask questions when you're supposed to be the smartest one in the room. What does it mean, really, to be born from above? Or the words we often use, born again. honestly, how can this be? We want answers no less than the ancient ones. We do rocket science and we chart genomes. And even for the mundane, we want experts. For our computers, we go to the genius bar. There's the brick doctor. There are garage floor pros. Our culture knocks itself out, pressing the delete button on ambiguity and uncertainty and mystery. So much in our culture urges us to avoid tension and resolve it as quickly as possible to get the job done. Right on red. Fast food, express lane, express checkout, Google, war. Do you know that somebody in Europe has recognized the harm in this worship of efficiency and information and answers to everything at the push, the click of a button? And they are starting to institute what they call the slow lane in grocery stores. That's the cashier you go to when you want to talk. You want to discuss the weather. You want to show a picture of your dog on your cell phone. Ask a question. Take your time. And everybody standing behind you in the line wants to do the same thing. That's the lane you choose if you are like poet Mary Oliver, who writes, "I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I walk slowly and bow often." Unfortunately, church is often a place where it is difficult to slow down and ask questions. And an aside here, of course, children are often the ones who have the best questions and the best answers. And when we hear them, they delight us and they surprise us, and often they are funny. And we want to laugh. How important it is that we sometimes hold that laughter within us so that we create a safe and welcoming place for every child to ask every question and give every answer and know it's okay. Church can often be a place where it is difficult to ask questions as we grow older. We think that being a Christian means knowing all the answers. We even have, signs on our cars. Jesus is the answer. What do you call those things on the cars? Bumper stickers. Yeah. See? I don't know all the answers. Bumper stickers on the car. We don't want to look stupid. We don't want to make a bad impression. We don't want to appear disloyal. And we certainly expect our clergy to have all the answers. Talking with one of my sisters about coming here, she said, "I hope there is a suggestion box at the pearly gates. Why does dying have to be so hard?" It didn't sound like a rhetorical question. I remember feeling inadequate because I'd never memorized the order of the books of the Bible. We didn't do that in my church growing up. But when I got to seminary, I was hanging around a lot of people who did. But then I decided that the table of contents is there for a reason. "Why is it called Good Friday?" someone asked me once, "when it's the day Jesus was crucified." I had to look it up. A new member of our church who did not grow up in a tradition of Sunday school or Bible study, who did not even own a Bible, asked, "What do the numbers mean in the Bible? How do you find John 3:16? Do you know how it feels to be asked questions like that? You feel honored to be trusted with such a question. You feel honored to have someone come to you with a heart open, to be invited into somebody's journey of faith. you feel love and hope. It is a holy thing. All those times people brought questions to Jesus must have made him glad. Of course, there had to be frustrating moments as well, especially when he'd already explained it more than once. But to question is to make it possible to grow in faith. In fact, I'd like to retitle the sermon. Instead of hard questions, it should just be question. It's a big part of what we say we want our church to be. That Micah 6:8 passage, to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. Asking questions is the mark of someone who can walk humbly. It's okay to say, I do not have all the answers. Faith is not static, although we can and do get stuck. My faith as a child, when I needed rules and clarity and security, was what I needed as a child. It laid essential groundwork for faith to grow and mature. But as adults, we cannot live by the same overly simplistic rules that governed our morality as children. Richard Rohr teaches this. When I was a child, I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a woman, I put away the childish ways. I put them behind me. The Apostle Paul. Faith is evolutionary. In the words of Ken Wilber, it's a journey. It has four stages. Cleaning up, we start. Growing up. Waking up. And then showing up. During the season of Lent, we are claiming the word threshold for a focus and to help guide and lead us into what is not yet known. Our music and arts committee and friends are providing images and poetry and prompts that you're finding in your worship order. This is what it looks like for today. You'll see one each Sunday throughout Lent. As we live with the still so recent death of our co-pastor and friend, Stacy Simpson Duke, we are given the hard gift of finding our way to deeper faith. Birth is one of life's great thresholds, death the other, with many small births and deaths in between. Richard Rohr would say that showing up, that fourth stage of spiritual transformation, showing up is the full and final result of the prior three stages. He calls the person who reaches that stage God's fully transformed work of art. So let us question in confidence that to ask a question shows faith that there is an answer, that God is there. Here, that the question brought in good faith leads to good faith. Why am I so anxious? What now? How can this be? What can I do to help? Are you with us, Lord, or not? This is what faith asks of us.